And welcome to another edition of the B Squared Podcast. It is Tuesday, August 30th as we record, and the Cubs are still very, very good. They are now at 83 wins for the season, 83-47, the only team playing above 600 ball, and they are at 638 baseball, and they are 7 games ahead of the Nationals for the best record in the National League, and they are 5 games ahead of the Rangers for the best record in Major League Baseball. He is Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Bernfield. If you're listening to us on the night we record, it means that you're probably a little bit tired because last night the Cubs played well past midnight, but all's well that ends well. They won 8-7 in 13 innings. And Brian Beto, you stayed up for the entire thing, didn't you?
I did. And I have a problem, and that's the first step, right? That's what they say. Admitting it's the first step, and that's where we are today, because last night it's the bottom of the eighth inning, and to preface it, I'm up between 5:30 and 6, and then put in kind of like a full day's work Monday through Friday, pretty standard hours, so it takes a lot to stay up late nowadays, especially with a child and living in the burbs.
You're old is what you're telling me.
So I'm setting the table for you a little bit here. So, anyways, the bottom of the eighth, the Cubs are down 6-3. I'm already kind of annoyed with the game. Their irrational anger had kicked in. We're full into irrational anger that the Cubs were losing this meaningless late August game. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, if they don't score in the bottom of the eighth, I'm going to bed. So obviously Wilson Contreras hits a 2-run homer. Gets within one. I think they have a chance to take the lead after the Baez double. Then Rizzo ends up striking out to end the inning. And I'm like, well, now I got to stand for the ninth, right? So the ninth comes. Obviously, hip, hip, Jorge ties it up. And I jump and scream and freak out the dog and the baby and all that stuff. Ties the game. And then I'm like, well, now I got to stay up for the 10th, right? So I stay up for the 10th, and the Cubs have bases loaded and one out. And I turn to Sarah, and I'm like, I'm going to bet. We're going to bed if we don't score here. And obviously the double play happens. Baez probably safe, but they can't overturn it with the video they have. We go to the 11th, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to bed. Forget this. Screw this. I'm going to bed. I'm not giving this team the time of day. I can't. This team that's at the time 35 games over 500, I'm pretty much swearing them off because they're not winning a meaningless late August game after coming back in the ninth. And I'm mad. And then obviously Sarah, my wife's like, you're not going to be able to sleep. Like, what are you doing? Like, calling me out for exactly who I am. And
that's
I end up
life.
Just game casting the top of the 11th. Nothing happened. Bottom goes 11th goes by pretty quickly. Sarah's like falling asleep at this point. We don't have a TV in our room, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like I can throw it on there. Top of the 12th happens. Nice and easy. I'm like, all right, maybe I'll just game cast the bottom of the 12th here and then fall asleep and nothing happens. Obviously, Baez triples with one away. And then I'm thinking to myself, like, well, hey, I had a chance to win it here. So I go all the way downstairs where nobody's going to hear me, turn the TV on mute in the dark, sit there. First thing I see is Russell at a fly ball to left. Marte makes the catch, throws out Baez. We go to the 13th. I go back up to bed. Gamecast the top of the 13th, see the Cubs give up a run on my phone. Then in the bottom of the 13th, Fowler singles, Bryant singles. Up I go again to the basement in the dark once again. And I end up watching the conclusion of the game, which lasted into technically today past midnight. But I'll tell you what, it was a great 5 hours of sleep because that was an exciting, fun game to watch. I know that was a long story, but it was a long night. And it was a lot of fun. And one of those games that you kind of – it doesn't have a huge significance long-term for the rest of the season, but it's one of those victories that you'll carry with you. We all look at some of the fun seasons that the Cubs have had this millennium, and a few of the wins during those specific seasons stand out, and I think this is going to be one of them from 2016.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that – you know, it's funny because my dad and my uncle are both texting me during the game last night, and they're saying this would be a huge game to win. And it's just funny because it wasn't a huge game to win. It was a fairly meaningless game to win. The reason why it was meaningful to beat the Pirates last night as we record on Tuesday the 30th, is that the way they won was significant. The fact that they came back from 6-3 and were able to tie the game with the Contreras home run and then the Soler home run, and then to have two consecutive innings in which you have guys thrown out at the plate with opportunities for go-ahead runs, and then you give up the run to allow the Pirates to move ahead, and you still score two runs in the bottom of the 13th to win it. So to me, the circumstances by which the Cubs won made it a significant game from a morale standpoint, from a, you know, team camaraderie standpoint, from the fact that it shows that they can be resilient in a game, but, you know, they're still 14 games up on the Cardinals and 15 and a half up on the Pirates. From that standpoint, it's complete and utterly meaningless. But it was a really exciting, fun game. Wrigley was rocking last night.
And you had a fun experience. You had the chance to do pre and post and talk about a game to step in on and fill in for Mark Grody, who does a fine job. And I know he was doing the play-by-play. I heard some of his calls today. But that had to be quite a thrill, not only to do it at the stadium, but do it at a game that you would probably remember even if you weren't doing the pre and post game.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, for me, you know me, Beto. I was living the real dream last night.
Heck, yeah.
Being in the booth and sitting behind Mark and Ron, and they're just such pros and nice guys, and working with Dave Miska and being in there for that broadcast and being part of it, it was awesome. But the fact that they won, and we're sitting, I mean, when you're sitting there for a 5-hour and 3-minute game, the only thing you're thinking the whole time is, how much is it going to suck if they lose this game?
For
and
sure.
Thankfully, they won, so it didn't suck, and it turned out to be great, and we all had a good time, and I didn't get home till almost 2 in the morning, and I didn't even care. It was a great night, and I had an absolute blast. But the Cubs over the weekend lost a series against the Dodgers. I didn't think it was any kind of commentary. I know that there are people that are trying to hot take this and say that, well, you know, they couldn't beat the Dodgers. It's a potential playoff matchup. Well, they're not going to face Brock Stewart in a playoff game, okay? And the fact that they lost that game on Sunday was based on a boneheaded defensive play, which in and of itself, if they were to make a boneheaded defensive play in a playoff game, they're probably going to lose anyway, right? So, I mean, that to me is not conclusive at all. And I didn't feel like the series this weekend allowed me to conclude anything about the Cubs and Dodgers. And, oh, by the way, Clayton Kershaw would probably be back for a playoff series, so it changes the entire dynamic of facing Los Angeles anyway. So I didn't find that series to be that important. I did think it was exciting how the Cubs were able to win those games in San Diego and how they continue to roll and how their starting pitching, for the most part, has been outstanding. And I think overall it was a pretty good week for the Cubs.
Yeah, I totally agree. We quote Happy Gilmore all the time, and this weekend was a total gold jacket, green jacket, who gives a shoot, and I have to excuse my language now that I have a newborn kid. I got to say things like shoot and shucks and things like that.
Yeah.
Gosh darn it, dagnabbit, to quote Hawk. But
yeah,
it was like the narratives were just flying high. I guess it was a slow sports day, or apparently, because it was, oh, you know, Cubs can't beat potential playoff foe. My column right here. Read it.
Oh,
and it's just, I don't care if they lost by 7 runs in those last two games. It had zero significance. Yeah, the Dodgers are a 90-win team, potentially, and the Cubs lost two games on the road to them by a total of 2 runs. Like, it's just not a big deal. Their just offense was a little bit quiet. They couldn't come through in a few spots. Like you said, there was a boneheaded play on Sunday that cost them the game. Saturday, they had a chance to kind of to tack on some runs early and just had to settle for one, and it came back to bite them. It happens. It's baseball. It's a 162-game season. It didn't bother me at all. They still had a winning West Coast road trip at 5-4, and it's been a good week. Last night was a lot of fun. Hopefully they can carry that some momentum and win some games at home the rest of the week between the Pirates and another potential playoff matchup against the Giants this weekend. So I don't know. Like, it's all about kind of enjoying the ride, staying healthy. It sounds like they're going to flip-flop some rotation guys with Montgomery and Hamill for the rest of the week, maybe bring back Lackey on Sunday. It's just now about, like we talked a little bit about last week, just enjoying the remainder of the season because we don't get too many of these.
No, we don't, and this has been an incredibly fun year, and I've been telling people that have been negative, maybe members of my family, that you
and
should...
this podcast and me for the irrational anger that sometimes flows through my veins.
Yes, that you, if you're not enjoying this season, you shouldn't be a Cub fan. It's been too exciting. It's been too fun. This team is too good, and... obviously, it's about October, and obviously, it's about whether they win the World Series, but there's nothing you can do about that right now. We can't flip time to August 7th, to October 7th, rather. So it is what it is. They're going to play in the playoffs. They're going to have a chance, and that's what you hope for. But while they're racking up wins, enjoy the hell out of it because this has been fantastic. And in the same vein, Beto, I want to ask you about something because it's bothering me how this is like that Peter Griffin segment on Family Guy. You know what really grinds my gears? So you know what really
yes.
You know what really grinds my gears?
I don't know,
the
but
fact
I'm
that Cub fans have gotten so insane about Jake Arrieta because of the standard that he set forth last year by being Bob Gibson and literally being the best pitcher ever for a 20-start stretch that he is not allowed to walk a batter. He is not allowed to give up a hit. He is not allowed to have any start that is less than 8 innings and 2 runs or 2 hits and no runs. I mean, it's last night, my perception of the way that he pitched was other than the Polanco 3-run homer, which I know is a significant hit, which he does deserve blame for giving up. I thought his command was good. I thought he was ahead of hitters. I thought that his efficiency was good. My biggest problems with Jake's effort last night were that he didn't turn that double play ball to second and he went to third inexplicably. I don't understand why he did that. I thought that was a bad baseball decision on his part. And I thought that Tripp Gibson, the home plate umpire, was – and you know me. I never blame the umps. I thought he was awful last night.
He wasn't good.
And Jake Arrieta had a number of pitches that if they go his way, the game is totally different. Now, ultimately – the numbers for Arrieta were not very good last night, and you would chalk it up to a bad start for him, and it was his worst start since, coincidentally, the last time he pitched against Pittsburgh, July 8th, when he gave up 6 earned runs. But I feel like, overall, after a rough month of July, Jake Arrieta has been much better since then. Overall, his season has been very, very good. And the only difference to me between this year and last year is that last year he was superhuman, and this year he's just a normal great pitcher. He's probably going to finish the season with 20 wins. I know wins aren't that important, but they are when it comes to Cy Young Awards. And if you win 20, that's a significant number no matter how you want to slice it. And he's going to finish with an ERA under 3 in all likelihood. And he's going to finish with very good numbers across the board in a pitcher war probably in the top 10 of the National League, no matter what. So overall, he's having another excellent season. He's probably never again going to be the pitching cyborg superhuman that he was last year. But I think that the conversations about him, that he's not reliable, that he's not that good, that he's not their best starter. I mean, it's just maybe he's not their best starter this year, but that's really a commentary on how good the starting staff is. But I still think that he is one heck of a pitcher, and I think people need to cool their jets.
Yeah, I agree the majority that people kind of freak out. I will play a little bit of devil's advocate for you, though, because there is a little bit of empirical evidence that talks about a little bit of a regression, not necessarily just from, like you said, the Bob Gibson human cyborg numbers that he was putting up last year. But there's some things out there, and I know Fangraphs have posted some things about the concern about, obviously the walk rate is up, especially to left-handed hitters, without the strikeout rate also increasing, which sometimes will happen because that basically just means players are going deeper into counts against him, which will raise the walk rate and raise the strikeout rate, but the strikeout rate stayed flat. So one of the reasons that could be is that his slider apparently has dropped off fairly dramatically And hasn't been found that much recently, and that could be the reason for a dip in productivity. So I understand that when you're an 83-win team that has the rotation that the Cubs do and the record that the Cubs do, you're going to try to poke holes in anything to find a flaw, and that could be this type of situation. I think that there is some reasoning to think, like, oh, maybe his slider's dropped off a little bit, which is interesting more than anything else to me. And there is actual evidence to back that up. But I think it goes back to that whole point of, like you just said, is that we're just so spoiled at how good not only he's been, but the entire staff, that we're going to look for to find ways to make this team mortal and human. And I think this is one of those scenarios right there.
Right. I mean, listen, is Jake Arrieta as good as he was last year? No, he's not. But he was never going to be. And if people's expectations were that Jake Arrieta has to repeat as the greatest pitcher of all time again, then your expectations were just wrong. I mean, that's just not – I don't know how anyone could expect that to be a sustainable way of performance. I mean, that's just – like, last year, he was so unbelievably great. And we talked about it earlier this year, Beto, that he – you know, it was like a 23-start stint – that was better than the height of Bob Gibson's career, right? I mean, you cannot possibly expect, and I'm not saying you, I'm just saying the people that are out there complaining about Arrieta, you can't possibly expect that level of performance at all times. Now, are there things that are clearly worse than last year? Of course. He's had some starts where he hasn't pitched well. The game against Milwaukee, walked 70, gave up 5 runs. He didn't pitch very well. The game against Pittsburgh last night, the aggregate totals, he didn't pitch very well. Now, do I think that he was better than the numbers last night? Yes, but the numbers are what they are, and they indicate that he didn't pitch very well. But other than those two starts, you know, he'd had 4 or 5 starts in between there that were all, for the most part, exemplary performances that you would expect from an ace-level pitcher. And I think that overall, he's still one of the top pitchers, not only in the National League, but in baseball. I think that it's clear that you mentioned that Fangraphs piece, which I thought was fascinating. His slider has dropped off, but they even said that his fastball might be the best pitch of any one pitch in baseball. I think that's kind of a weird thing to evaluate, so I don't even know what to make of that as an analysis point.
It's
but,
like you at Deerfield. Just think about it that way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. My 73.5-mile-an-hour fastball is great.
We'll round it up to 74. The way you hit the ball, though, it looked like it was coming out at 97.
That's 100% true. I you know, it's a crime that I'm not pitching for the Cubs right now. But
hey, it'd be Tebow, right?
All right. Oh God, I don't even get me started on that.
Yeah, let's. I'm sorry, I brought that.
Yeah, let's just not even discuss that. I mean, the guy hasn't played baseball in 11 years. He played in high school, but he's like, you know, I'm going to play the majors. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, good luck with that. But you know, all I'm saying is that I think that we can parse all these things because he's not perfect anymore, and he's just a really excellent starting pitcher as opposed to the greatest pitcher in the history of the sport. And I think that what is amazing about what he's done this year is that he has struggled with command at times. He doesn't have his slider the way that he did last year. And his aggregate totals are still really, really good. So I just think that people's expectations of Jake are insane. And I think that for the most part, he's been a very reliable, good pitcher for the Cubs. And the idea that he's not just – it's not based – at least it's not based in the numbers. It's not based in the game log of reality.
Recently, nobody is saying that he sucks all of a sudden, right?
Right. And I just see this stuff on Twitter. It's like, well, Jake's not so good. He can't throw strikes. Well, yes, there have been games where he can't throw strikes, but he is going to walk a couple batters in a game. He has a lot of movement on his pitches. That's one of the reasons why he rarely gets hit, is because there's so much movement on his ball that it's not easy for him to paint the corners every time. And the reason why he was the greatest pitcher in baseball last year was because with all that movement, he still had pinpoint accuracy, which is hard to believe that was even possible for as long as it was.
Definitely. And it'll be – I'm guessing that they're going to give the starters a little more rest down the stretch. So he should be rested up, ready to go, and he will be the game one starter in the NLDS. So that's all there is to it. And I'm looking forward to seeing kind of how he finishes up. But I agree, there's, and it happens. You tend to overreact when you're looking for things to blame or talk about in a season where not much has gone wrong. And you're just trying to make sure you're shored up for the playoffs. But it fun week of baseball. I do. There's one thing I did want to bring up and talk about, because we've talked about this guy a lot, and mostly in a, at least offensively, not in a good fashion. But Jason Heyward.
Yeah.
I get it's a small sample before everyone freaks out and says, oh, it's been like 3 days. Well, you know what? Just assume that we understand it's a small sample size unless we tell you otherwise.
Right.
He's been much improved recently. And I know they've talked about some of the toe tap. And I'm interested to hear kind of what your thoughts and if you echo what I'm saying here. And he's changed his swing. He's just a lot quicker, looks a lot crisper. He's getting to some high fastballs that he hadn't been getting through the first 95% of the season. And it's been so much more fun to watch. And he's making hard contact fairly consistently. And his numbers, but after he was sat in Colorado and after he got rid of the toe tap, night and day, and even more so, ever since I officially dropped him from my fantasy team, the dude has basically been the MVP of the National League. So I will take full credit for that. But it's been a lot of fun to watch. And not only that, if I pretty much wrote him off offensively for the remainder of this season, but if he's able to be anywhere near competent at the plate the remainder of the year into the playoffs, wow, what an extra add for this offense.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I agree with everything that you said there. I mean, he's on an eight-game hitting streak right now. He batted almost 350 on the recent road trip, and he had a couple of hits last night. I talked about it on the post-game show on the Score last night at 1 in the morning or whatever the hell I was on. But, you know, we were talking about how Jason Heyward looks so much more comfortable at the plate, and even the at-bats in which he's not getting hits. I mean, yes, he had a couple of ground outs to second, and I know that there's going to be people that go, oh, another 4-3 for Jason Heyward. But other than those two, you know, I thought that he was hitting the ball hard almost every time up. I mean, in his six at-bats last night, I would argue that four of the six times he hit the ball very hard, and that's a good sign. The double that he hit to the right field corner, he turned on a 96-mile-an-hour fastball and roped it. And that kind of stuff to me, what you mentioned about the toe tap, his feet, you and I have talked about this a lot this year. I have felt for most of the season, and I'm not a scout, I'm not professing to know everything about the game. In high school, I used to teach hitting mechanics as one of my, you know, side things extracurricularly. And so I think I know a little bit, but I'm not claiming to be an expert. I know that when your feet are moving a lot in the batter's box, and when your feet are moving a lot before you swing the bat or before the barrel of the bat comes through the zone, it will throw off your timing. You're not likely to have your weight into the pitch, and it's probably going to cause you to have weak contact more often than not. And I think that we saw that a lot with Jason Heyward this year. And Tom Verducci wrote about it in that long piece for Sports Illustrated, which I thought was outstanding. I think that there's been others that have corroborated this theory during the season, so I don't think I'm the only one that's saying this. I think this has been generally out there as a point, but I think that when you look at the way that he's swinging now, he has eliminated a lot of that extra movement. And what you've seen as a result is a quicker swing, better timing, and Heyward is starting to square up the baseball and get the ball onto the barrel of his bat as opposed to the handle. Everyone's always like, well, he keeps grounding out to second. Well, why is that happening? His timing is bad. He's hitting the ball off the barrel of off the handle of the bat, and consequently, he's not getting any power into those swings. What you're seeing now is a different hitter, and I think that Heyward, you know, Joe Maddon has said this, and one of the reasons why Theo and Jed signed him is because he's a winner. He's a guy that they expect to come through in big spots. And I think significantly, not only is he hitting the ball more consistently and hitting it hard more consistently, but he's hitting the ball consistently in spots where you need him to hit it. And I think that that's important too. So is this eight-game hitting streak meaning that he's going to get hot and he's going to run through September and October? I have no idea. But I would submit this to you too, Brian Beto. If he hits in September and October, and specifically October, no one's going to give a damn that he had a bad season. if he gets big hits in the month of October, that's going to justify his signing well enough for Cub fans. I really believe that. And, you know, I'm rooting for the guy because he is so unbelievably likable. You want him to do well. He's just had a miserable season, and I think that the contract and the pressure and some of that stuff may be getting to him. I'm not in his head. I don't know for sure. But he just strikes me as the kind of guy that cares so much and has been working so hard that it's just kind of screwed him up all year. And, you know, I feel like he's starting to turn the corner. I feel like we're seeing the evidence that he's turning the corner.
First of all, love the scouting report. Rudy Jaramillo Burnfield is what I'm going to start calling.
Oh, God.
I could pretty much guarantee you would never expect that we'd have a Rudy Jaramillo reference.
No, in this podcast. I was not expecting that. Who was the hitting coach when they went to the playoffs in 03? I'm drawing a blank.
Wow.
Because Rothschild was the pitching coach, but who was the hitting coach?
It wasn't Matthews, was it?
No, I think that
Sarge?
Was it before? I don't know.
Who was Gene Kleins? First base, but also he spent some time as a hitting coach, didn't he?
Who was the hitting coach that ended up being, wasn't he a manager somewhere else?
Rene Latchman?
Chris Spire, wasn't he what?
He was the third base coach.
Oh, he was the third base coach.
Went.
Oh, yeah, all right. I don't know, but whatever. Some piece of crap former hitting coach.
That's a great trivia. I mean, we're obviously going to look this up while I'm trying to articulate this next mind-blowing Jason Hayward point I'm going to make. But it's going to be a huge bonus if he can hit. And you're right. If he hits in the postseason and the Cubs are able to somehow get to the World Series, potentially win it, right there, it's worth the year. And because at this point, they're playing for October. They're not playing for the regular season anymore. Yeah, it's not. He didn't have a great offensive year, regardless of how he hits cumulatively. But it will be worth it if he continues to hit like this. And I got news for everyone that's freaking out about the 4-3 groundouts. Yes, it's extremely frustrating. He's going to do that, even when he's good. His ground ball rate is actually down this year, believe it or not. But the difference is from this year up until maybe a week ago and his previous years is that the hard hit rate hasn't been there. The line drive percentage has been down and his exit velocity has been way down. Recently, even though the ground ball, that weak 4-3 ground out has been there from time to time, he's hitting the ball with authority. And like you said, he was able to catch up to that high cheese and pull it into the right field corner a couple of times. You think of that first Dodgers game where he scored the game-tying run. He roped that ball off Canley Jansen, who's got a phenomenal cutter that was up and in and was able to move to third and then home on a wild pitch. And that was a big spot, to your point, even further. So I've pretty much, like I said, written him off to do anything offensively. So I feel like anything that he can contribute at the plate the rest of the season is going to be a huge bonus. So I'm really excited, even though they lost 2 out of 3 and it hurts the loss column. I think the bigger picture was that Jason Hayward had 5 consecutive hits, that he looked way more competent at the plate, and he looked like at least similar, albeit in a short sample, of the guy that we saw with the St. Louis Cardinals a year ago. So we'll see ends up what's happening. It was certainly a good turn of the tide from Hayward over the last few days.
No doubt. And Brian Beto, the Cubs now will complete this series against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and then they will have a 4-gamer against the Giants, in which I'm sure lots of people are going to extrapolate this into somehow what it's going to be for the playoffs. Can I just say this before we even get into the discussion? Last year, the Cubs went 7-0 in the regular season against the Mets, and then they got swept by them in the playoffs. So that's how much your regular season matchups matter for postseason play. I just don't buy the idea that a regular season series is going to somehow dictate the way that a postseason series is going to go. I really don't think that matters. The bottom line is, in a postseason series, it's a 5-game or a 7-game series. They're random because they're shorter series, and whichever team is able to perform at that time is going to win, period. I mean, it has nothing to do with games in April, May, June, July, August, September. Nothing. I really don't see any correlation there. I mean, do you?
I totally agree. It doesn't matter. Yeah, certainly you'd like to see success if you have the choice.
Yeah, of
against
course.
The team.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it doesn't really matter. And I know it's, sports are different. But look at the NBA. It's the same thing. Like, the Bulls used to beat the crap out of LeBron in the regular season. They can't even sniff a seventh game against him in the playoffs.
Right.
And you look at the, like you said, the perfect example is the Mets last year and whatnot. It just, to me, it doesn't really matter. You look at some of the Cubs' playoff opponents in the past, and the Cubs were pretty even with the Cardinals, if not mistaken, last year. In 08, I think the Cubs handled the Dodgers pretty well and got swept in the playoffs and whatnot. You just can't write the narrative and actually think there's any substance to it if you're saying that it does matter. Also, Gary Matthews was the hitting coach in 2003,
Hell
and I'm extremely impressed with myself that I knew that.
Great, great job, Brian Beto. All right, so are you
Dick
predicting?
Dick Pohl was the bench coach, by the way. That's a great name.
Well, I would never forget.
Lions first base coach.
Yeah, I mean, I would never forget Dick Pohl. How could anyone? I mean, with that name, I don't know how you could ever forget that guy.
Mr. Richard Pohl. Yeah, good point.
Richard Pohl. Poor guy. What a name. So anyway, we have to get to the favorite segment of this show where you predict that the Cubs are going 6-0 the rest of the week. So is that what you were picking against the Pirates and then the Giants, or are you predicting a loss?
Do you believe in a term called momentum, Ricky Harvey Burnfield? Because that's where we are headed after last night. We have a cool versus Hendricks. Hendricks' ERA is in like the negatives at home. So obviously that's a win. Tomorrow, Jason Hamill's looking for a little bit of redemption after his 39-pitch outing where he was not very happy with his skipper Joe. And that's a win. So sweep against the Pirates, who we just dominate. And then we have the Giants. If you recall, were swept in a key series at Wrigley Field by the Cubs around this time a year ago.
Yes,
so
remember,
this
yes.
tends to repeat itself. So as a result, we're expecting, yes, 6-0 the remainder of the week.
Hold on, hold on. You cannot use the argument, hence history tends to repeat itself, with the Chicago Cubs, because then what you're saying is that they're going to lose in the playoffs, okay? So we can't use that argument.
I'm saying history tends to repeat itself in this very secluded example that I'm using right here about the Cubs sweeping the Giants at Wrigley and a weekend series late in the season. I think that's fair to use, you know?
Okay.
I'm not going to extrapolate it to all the other crap with the organization and the history, but for this very specific example, I think it's relevant and I think it applies.
Fair. Okay. If we put that on there, then fine. Okay.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I mean, because once you said that, I was like, oh my god, I'm thinking of goats and Bartman and black
cats. Oh my god, I'm an idiot.
It's not good. Okay, fine. So I am going to predict that the Cubs take 2 out of 3 from this in this Pirates series, and then I'm going to predict that they take 3 out of 4 against the Giants. I'm feeling good. I feel like they're going to take 3 out of 4 against San Francisco.
What's the game we lose? When do we lose?
Well, I think that the Montgomery-Jeffrey Samardzija game is going to be a Cubs win, because I feel like Jeffrey is going to crumble a little bit at Wrigley Field against his former mates. The Bumgarner against Arrieta start, I'm not feeling great about, just because nothing against Arrieta. I just feel like Mad Bum at Wrigley, I don't know.
Is that Saturday?
That's Saturday. Lester against Kane on Friday. I feel like we win that game. So I feel like we're up 2 games to none. I think the Arrieta Bumgarner game is a push. And then I think the Cueto against TBA start, probably Lackey on Sunday.
TBA is hot. Great XFIP at home.
Oh, outstanding XFIP. Ask our buddy Sahadev about that. So I would say that I'd go with, I mean, I don't know. If it's Lackey against Cueto, that could be a loss, but I'm going to pick one of those two the Cubs win. So I'm picking them to win the first two, split the last two. So,
fair
all right,
enough.
We have a Facebook page. How do we find it?
Search the B Squared Show on Facebook. We will post the link to that. We've had that page for about 6 years, back when our news feeds were about college and bars and fun things, and now it's about babies and 5K races.
Yeah.
Political hot takes.
Oh,
so.
God. Can we eliminate Facebook political hot takes?
What?
Can Facebook political hot takes. So you know what the funniest part about Facebook political hot takes is? That everyone that puts one out there goes, I'm not usually the one to do this, but, and then they give their Facebook political hot take.
Hey, right? Do you know where I can find a Colin Kaepernick take on Reddit?
That was like invented for sports talk radio.
It really was, and social media. I love it. But through all of those changes and the evolution of our Facebook timelines, the B Squared Show page has remained intact, believe it or not. It wasn't used for a while, but it's still there, and that's where we're going to post all of our podcasts.
Yes, and you can also follow us on Twitter. He is at Brian Beto. I'm at Jordan Burnfield, because we're both really creative with our Twitter handles. You can also find us on iTunes and on Podomatic. We will have the link up for this podcast very shortly. Beto, always fun, buddy. I will talk to you soon.
You have a good one. 6-0 week. We're looking forward to next.
Don't mean a thing without the ring. I will talk to you later. This is the B Squared Podcast. Keep listening each and every week. We will talk to you soon.